From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Yesterday, voters went to the polls for Idaho's primary election, setting the stage for the November contest. So, who won, who lost, and ultimately, what does this all mean for Idaho? We're going to break that down this hour with our panel, Kevin Richer, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Ed News, Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun, and our own James Dawson from Boise State Public Radio News. I want to welcome all of you to the show.
Hey, Gemma.
Hello.
Thanks for having us, Gemma.
Absolutely. And a quick note to our listeners, we will have our weekly medical experts on tomorrow. We know it's on Wednesdays normally, but we needed to shift things so that we could talk about the primary election today. So first off, anybody get any sleep last night?
I left the office about 3:35 and got to bed a little before 4:30, but I was sort of like going over everything in my mind and I didn't really sleep, but we all knew that was coming and we were all excited to cover the election. And so I'm excited to talk about the results with my friends today.
I got four whole hours to bring it.
Hey, all right, good. How about you, Jimmy?
I got a little more sleep, probably about five.
All right. Well, okay. So altogether you guys got like a one full night's sleep. So we'll take it. Yeah. I want to start at the top of the ticket. Let's talk about the governor's race. I think it's fair to say the gloves came off this election season, in particular, when we look at the two factions in the Republican Party, the more moderate side and the far right wing side. So Jimmy, Kevin, and Clark, Jimmy, why don't we start with you, but let's talk about the race for governor.
Yeah. I mean, this was a knockout, you know, knockdown, drag out fight, if I can not mix my metaphors or, you know, screw them up somehow with a lack of sleep. Anyway, I mean, Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan came out swinging hard from the far right at Governor Brad Little, and really has since the early days of the pandemic in, you know, March, April 2020. You know, in May 2020, she went with a few other politicians to Hardware Brewing, for example, in Kendrick, Idaho, which opened ahead of Governor Little's reopening plan. You know, they said that they needed to get some more revenue to just pay their bills, basically. Otherwise, they were going to go under. And the state issued them a warning saying, hey, you know, you're in violation of this. We might have to fine you or pull your liquor license, to which McGeehan was, you know, appalled. She didn't think that business just trying to stay afloat and, you know, make money for their family should have to deal with that. And it's just gotten worse ever since. Pretty acrimonious relationship, you know, over the last couple of years with Little leaving the state at times, and McGeehan issuing these executive orders banning mask and vaccine requirements, which Little repealed immediately, either right when he got back to the state or while he was in Texas, in one example. So, I mean, no love lost between these two. Pretty massive difference, though, in support with Brad Little. These are unofficial results, we should say. They have not been certified yet. But, you know, almost 53% of the vote going to Brad Little, with 32% to McGeehan.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin and Clark, I mean, we've talked about this so much on the program, this infighting. What kind of surprised me about the governor's race last night was how early it was called, Clark.
Yeah. I think that was really interesting. It was about 10:20 p.m., so just less than an hour and a half after polls closed in North Idaho, that we saw the results come in. And it was a big victory for Governor Little. And we had talked before, I think all of us were on the show a few weeks ago, talking about how the 2022 elections in Idaho were the most important and consequential elections in the state of Idaho for a lot of reasons. All the statewide races up, like the governor's race, all the legislative seats, redistricting, everything coming together. But when you look at the governor's race and the large victory that incumbent Governor Brad Little had in his Republican primary, it is one of several examples of, particularly in statewide races, Idahoans rejecting the far right extremist candidate in several of these statewide races and going with the more traditional establishment Republican. That was certainly the case with Governor Brad Little and the far right challenge from Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan. That also played out in the Lieutenant Governor's race and some of the legislative races and some of the other races that we can talk about. And there's going to be big changes ahead in 2023. But for four of the five big statewide races I was watching, you can say that the traditional establishment Republican beat a challenge from the far right conservative candidate. And when we get into these legislative races, a little bit of a mixed bag. Several prominent traditional moderate Republicans lost their reelection campaigns. But with the statewide races, it was Idahoans coming together and rejecting this move from the far right to take control of almost every statewide office.
And you know, I think...
Go ahead, Kevin.
And while, you know, Jimmy's right about how acrimonious this race was, as it unfolded, as we got closer to Election Day, I never got the sense that McGeehan's campaign was catching fire with everyday Idahoans. And that's easy to say the day after the election with 2020 hindsight. But maybe there were signals of this all along. I mean, her fundraising was never close to where Governor Little's fundraising was, and seemed to slow down. I mean, you know, as I wrote about it towards the end of the race, she was being outraised by Ed Humphries in the final month of the campaign. She was outraised by Shelby Rongstad, who was running a write-in campaign that, you know, may or may not be a footnote on the Democratic side of the ballot. I just never got the sense that McGeehan's campaign, while it drew a lot of attention early, and while it's drawn national attention down to the wire, I just never got a sense that it was resonating with voters. I mean, Brad Little cleared the 50% threshold. And that's something we always watch for in a race like this, where you have multiple opponents. A majority of Idaho voters said yes to Brad Little last night, in spite of everything, in spite of coronavirus, in spite of, you know, everything that Janice McGeehan threw at him. He got a majority of the vote.
I think Kevin is making a great point. I would also say that I think Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan made a lot of unforced errors or mistakes on her own that may have cost her standing with Idaho voters. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about the lawsuit that she lost after withholding public records and how Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan is running a budget deficit for her office this year, which is one of the smallest offices in the state of Idaho. She has no paid staff working in her office at this point and hasn't for weeks. And in the run-up to the election, not only were state officials pointing out the budget deficit that she was going to run, but they were talking about withholding her salary. Just before the election, there was a complaint emailed in to three different state agencies saying the lieutenant governor's limited office hours may have been in violation of state law requiring offices to be open from 8 to 5 on every weekday. And so the lieutenant governor certainly made a lot of mistakes leading up to the primary over the last year that may have cost her in the eyes of voters, even conservative voters.
And McGeehan's appearance before AFPAC earlier this year, I think, was probably a bridge too far for even some conservative voters.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth noting that when we look at how handily Brad Little won, even if it had only been with Brad Little and Janice McGeehan, and she received all of those other votes, he still would have won. Now, with that said, Jimmy, the lieutenant governor race was much closer.
It was. So you had current Speaker of the House, Scott Bedke, taking on Representative Priscilla Giddings. He ultimately pulled that out with, looks like about 52% of the votes compared to 43% from Giddings. And, you know, this is, for being the second most powerful, quote unquote, office in, you know, the state of Idaho, they don't really have all that much or all that many duties assigned to them. And it's really not that prominent of a race, but you know, a whole lot of establishment organizations, whether they were business PACs or, you know, high dollar donors traditionally that latch on to, you know, more mainstream conservatives got behind Bedke. Whereas Giddings got a whole lot of money from out of state as well to try to take over this office and succeed McGeehan. You know, still he won out with a pretty comfortable margin, even though it was closer. But, you know, in her concession speech that she posted on Facebook, Gittings said, you know, we need to continue building armies at the local level, you know, to really upset the establishment and take control of, you know, state government in Idaho.
Mm-hmm. We need to talk about the attorney general race. This was an upset. Lawrence Wasdin has been the AG in the state of Idaho for 19 years, has been, yes, he is a Republican, but has very much followed the letter of the law, has really not gotten involved in the politics, in particular, the really divisive politics that we've seen in the Republican Party in recent years. And he lost handily to Raul Labrador. Clark, do you want to start with this one?
Yeah, I think it was a real interesting race, and it was an upset in the regards to an establishment incumbent who served for almost 20 years losing his reelection bid. But I don't know that it was super surprising. I actually think that that some of us on the call today were probably expecting Raul Labrador to win, and there's a couple of reasons why. You know, when you look at a race like the statewide attorney general's race, Raul Labrador, even though he wasn't the incumbent, brought a lot of name recognition to that race because he's a former member of Congress who's won elections in Idaho, was elected to Congress, served in the Idaho legislature, certainly is no stranger to politics and elections in the state of Idaho. There was a ton of money spent in this race. Every time I turned on the television, every time I watched a YouTube video, I was getting these ads. I think the ones funded by Club for Growth specifically are the ones that I was seeing going after Wasdin. And so I think name recognition was a factor. And I think Raul Labrador enjoyed a lot of that. I think there was a ton of money and a ton of advertising done on this. And I had noticed during the statewide attorney general debate that was on public television, I had thought that Raul Labrador performed very well. I thought he looked very confident. I thought he answered the questions well. I thought he looked professional on the debate. And so I thought he had a good debate. And then watching him last night at the Idaho Republican election celebration in downtown Boise, Labrador was behind early on, but he was one of the candidates that was working the room. He never appeared worried. He gave interviews where he talked about how he knew he would be behind based on early absentee results from Ada County and that he would overcome that throughout the night. So I think Labrador had a lot of experience, even though he was the challenger going after the incumbent. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be really interesting to watch because I think those two men, Lawrence Wasdin, the incumbent who lost, and Raul Labrador, the challenger who won the primary election, I think they'll have a very different approach to handling the attorney general's office, as you alluded to, Gemma. Whereas Wasdin sort of stayed out of it, and his role was kind of calling balls and strikes, to use words that Lawrence Wasdin had used, kind of saying, this is unconstitutional, this is not constitutional. Whereas Raul Labrador during the debates called for big changes in how the attorney general's office is run. And a lot of people are thinking that he would be more of a advocate for the legislature and some of the policies that the conservative legislators push forward rather than a check on the Idaho legislature. But I'd love to hear what Jimmy thought about this race.
Yeah. And Jimmy, can we talk about that? Because we should note that there is, as we are talking live at noon today, the GOP party is having a kind of a rally on the Capitol steps. And Raul Labrador has spoken and he has said, quote, he will always follow the Idaho Constitution. With that said, though, Jimmy, I mean, in the debates that Clark referenced, he said the job should be political. And a lot of people could say, well, you are supposed to be neutral as an attorney.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. I was on the panel for that debate on Idaho Public Television, and you know, I asked him straight up, you know, you said that you were going to be a friend or an ally in the attorney general's office to the legislature, and he cut me off and said, no, I never said that, even though I'm looking right now at a press release saying, "I will be a true partner with conservative lawmakers in the legislature as they work to draft and write good laws that will stand up against the gamesmanship of activist judges," end quote. So, you know, you've got that going for you. We can certainly expect maybe some more lawsuits or certainly a more high profile appearance. Whereas, you know, Lawrence Wasdin tend to work behind the scenes a whole lot more over his, you know, five terms as attorney general, which was a record. You know, Labrador has never shied away from taking the spotlight and being more of an outspoken conservative, as we saw since he was a founding member of the Freedom Caucus in the House during the Tea Party wave in the early parts of the 2010s.
You know, well, and go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I was just going to jump in on what Jimmy said. I'm really interested in the politics of this outcome and the policy implications for this outcome, because as Jimmy alluded to, Raul Labrador is now the face of the far right in Idaho politics, if he wants that role. And Raul Labrador has always been a pretty politically ambitious individual. He's the face of conservative politics in Idaho right now. It's not Chynna's McGee, and not after last night, and I wouldn't say that it's Priscilla Giddings either. So he's positioned himself for wherever he wants to be in 4 years, whether that's running for re-election as attorney general, whether that's running again for governor, who knows. But I'm really interested in the policy of this, because Lawrence Wasdin has run this very large and very complex law firm for 20 years. The attorney general's office is a huge legal apparatus. And I would imagine that a lot of the staff attorneys who have been writing the opinions that we've been quoting in stories for years, many of them probably view the law fairly similarly to how their boss, Lawrence Wasdin, views the law. Let's call balls and strikes. Let's heed the Constitution. Let's not play politics with constitutional matters. How many of those attorneys who could probably make a whole lot more money in the private sector are going to look at working for Raul Labrador and say, "Yeah, I can make the transition. New boss, no big deal." I think you're going to see a lot of turnover. So I'm going to be very curious to see not just what kind of opinions we're getting out of the attorney general's office, assuming Labrador wins the general election. What kind of opinions do we get? And who are the folks writing those opinions? Because my guess is it could be a whole different cast of characters.
Yeah, especially considering that the attorney general's office currently has a problem with turnover. I mean, you can, like Lawrence Wasdin said during the debate, they can walk across the street to, you know, Boise City Hall and instantly make, you know, tens of thousands of dollars more than they can.
And who knows who's making that walk today or in a couple of weeks or a few months?
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think this is a race to definitely watch, come the general election. But also, I mean, the likelihood is Raul Labrador will win the general election, and we are going to see a huge shift in the attorney general's race, the attorney general's office, rather. So, let's go next to Secretary of State. This was a really tight race, and Clark, I'll start with you because. Phil McGrain, who is the Ada County clerk, beat his first challenger, because there were two, Dorothy Moon, by only 2%.
Yeah, super close race. This was a race, like you said, Phil McGrain is the county clerk in Ada County, the state's largest, most popular county, and he was running against two state legislators, Representative Dorothy Moon and State Senator Mary Souza. Phil McGrain, like you said, finished in first place, but just a 2.2% margin over Dorothy Moon, who got second place. And I think this is another example of a statewide race where the more traditional establishment Republican Phil McGrain beat challenges from the far right. Certainly Representative Dorothy Moon is one of the very most conservative members of the Idaho legislature. Senator Mary Souza is also a very conservative member of the Idaho legislature. This is an important race, and there was an important debate leading up to this primary election where all three of those candidates were asked who won the 2020 presidential election, and Phil McGrain said that President Biden won, whereas Representative Moon and Senator Souza denied that President Biden was elected president, despite the fact that President Biden was overwhelmingly elected president, and every recount and every audit has showed that. And so there was a major difference in the candidates right off the bat, but it was a very close race. And Secretary of State is important. Just to kind of get into it, the Secretary of State kind of oversees some of the business functions in the state of Idaho with business records and notaries and things like that. But the Secretary of State is in charge of elections. And Representative Moon in particular had pushed a number of bills during the legislative session that would have made major sweeping last minute changes to voting and voter registration laws in the state of Idaho. Almost all of those efforts failed, but Representative Moon wanted to do away with being able to use student IDs as an acceptable form of ID at the polls. One of her earlier bills would have done away with same-day registration in the state of Idaho, which is something that has been a hallmark and has been available to Idahoans for decades. And so this was one of, everybody talks about the governor's race, but I'm glad we're talking about some of these other races because this is an extremely important race. We're talking about the person who's in charge of elections for the state of Idaho. And this is one where there were significant differences among the candidates who were running. And I'll be quiet for a second and let Kevin jump in.
And Gemma, the takeaway from this race is that 57% of Republican voters last night voted for a chief elections officer who questions the outcome of the last presidential election.
Right. I mean, that truly sums it up right there, Kevin, because when you look at the Phil McGrane and what he brings to this role, he was hands down the most qualified candidate of any three of them. He, as we mentioned, I mean, he runs elections for Ada County, has done it for years. Began mobile voting in order to make sure that more people come out to vote. He has run a very clean and ethical office. And you're right, Kevin. I mean, that speaks volumes with what you just said. And Jimmy, your thoughts on the Secretary of State's office before we move on to the other big statewide race.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin put it perfectly. You had 57% of Republican voters, really embrace candidates who, thought that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump, which it was not.
Right. In a one-on-one race, a two-person race for Secretary of State, we may be looking at a very different outcome.
That is very true. Yeah, that's very true. So, Kevin, I want to chat with you about state school superintendent. Incumbent Sherry Ybarra lost, but lost in third place.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a very interesting result for a couple of reasons. It was a bad night for incumbents up and down the ticket. And we'll talk about that, too, when we get to the legislative races. I think that in the end, as I look at this one, I don't think Sherry Ybarra, even as an eight-year incumbent, I don't think she had a lane. In the end, I don't think she had a very clear path to victory after all. Debbie Critchfield, former State Board of Education president, pretty well known in education circles, not as well known in statewide political circles. She ran a very slick, and I don't mean slick in a pejorative, I mean slick in terms of a very professional campaign. She raised more than $300,000 for this primary. We've not seen that kind of money, even close to that kind of money, in a primary race for state superintendent over the past 20 years. It was not a terribly inspiring campaign. I think sometimes it was a little bit of a squishy message in terms of what exactly she would change in education policy. But she really captured something with the mainstream. You saw a lot of commercials with Critchfield getting support from former Governor Butch Otter and Lori Otter. And I don't think you can ever underestimate the power of the Butch Otter brand in Idaho Republican circles, even today, even with the changes in Republican politics. So that was Critchfield's lane. And ultimately, that's how she won. Brandon Durst, the former Democratic legislator who was running as a hardline conservative, he captured the right. And he won places like Kootenai County. Really took the right wing of the party and took that vote. That didn't leave a whole lot for Sherry Ybarra. So I'm not terribly surprised that she lost. I'm not even terribly surprised that she finished third, because I think once Critchfield carved out her niche and Brandon Durst carved out his niche, there wasn't much of the pie left for Sherry Ybarra.
Yeah. All right, let's head to the legislature. We saw some mixed results last night, especially when we break it down between moderate Republicans and far-right Republicans. So I want to start with the House, where, Clark, we did see more moderates win in the House.
Yeah, it was sort of, and we can kind of go through, you know, different races, but overall, depending on how you count a legislator who was appointed as a long-term substitute, I was tracking 19 incumbent Republican legislators who lost their primary elections. Jimmy and Kevin can talk about this in a minute. There's a couple that are very close. I think we could be looking at a handful of recounts. But it was interesting. Conservative incumbent legislators, far-right legislators who lost their re-election bids, or who lost their, pardon me, primary election bids last night, include Representative Chad Christensen from Eastern Idaho, Representative Ron Nate, which could well be in a recount situation, but he's from Rexburg, Representative Kerry Hanks from St. Anthony lost, and Representative Gay Ann DeMordaunt, a Republican from Eagle, lost. She was one of the ones who was really making the strongest push to cut funding for the Library Commission and to go after quote-unquote inappropriate material that she alleged was in Idaho libraries. After that big effort, this legislative session, looks like Gay Ann DeMordaunt lost her primary race. So I tracked 19 legislative incumbents who lost. There's a handful of far-right Republicans who lost their primary election bids, but there were also several moderate Republican legislators who lost. I'm thinking about Representative Greg Cheney of Caldwell, who was running for a Senate seat and lost his primary. I'm thinking about Representative Jim Woodward, a Republican from Sagal, which is way up in North Idaho. He serves on JFAC. He lost his primary. Representative Carl Crabtree of Grangeville lost. Representative Paul Amador was a moderate Republican from Coeur d'Alene who lost. And Senator Jeff Agenbrod of Nampa is a Republican who had been appointed the new co-chairman of JFAC, who lost his primary. And so there's going to be all kinds of changes coming to the Idaho legislature. Some moderates won and some moderates lost last night. But we could be looking at 40 or more new legislators out of 105 total. But it's going to be wild. There's going to be all kinds of changes to JFAC, which is the Joint Budget Committee. We already knew there's going to be a new Speaker of the House because Scott Bedke left the House and won his primary for lieutenant governor. And so major changes, all kinds of new leadership positions, new committee chairs, a totally new look to the powerful budget committee and JFAC. And so there's a lot to talk about in the Idaho legislature. And a lot of these candidates who won Republican primaries last night, either in open races or knocking off incumbents, I'm not that familiar with them. And they don't, a lot of them don't have voting records. And so I don't know, we know exactly how they're going to approach policymaking next year, but it's sure going to be interesting and a bad night for incumbents. But I think it has to do with redistricting. Several legislators were drawn together in the same district and had to run against each other. Several retired before the election because of redistricting. All kinds of interesting stuff going on. I'd love to hear from James on the races that he tracked.
Yeah. And Jimmy, can we talk about that? Because as I mentioned, I mean, we saw more of a mixed bag in the House, but the Senate got redder. I mean, and I think that we should point out that the Senate has kind of been the gatekeeper when we've looked at the more, what has tended to be the more far right for representatives. And that likely could go away come January. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think that's exactly right. And that's why I wrote the story that I wrote this morning talking about, you know, sure, the far right lost kind of these high profile statewide races and with them come their own respective powers and depending on which office you're talking about. But, you know, the Senate has been a huge prize that the far right has been wanting to get a share of or more of a share of for years, because like you said, it was a more moderating force. You know, they consistently every year bash leadership, Senate Republican leadership, that is, for, you know, holding bills in committee, desk drawers, you know, that were passed by the House. I'm thinking specifically of, you know, a bill to ban mask mandates or gender affirming care, making that a criminal offense for doctors, or, you know, name, you know, 20, 30 pieces of legislation over the years that have come from the House, even in just the past year, that have not seen the light of day in the Senate. So by my count, you know, and this was all based on 35 endorsements from Idaho Freedom PAC, which is a group run by Dustin Hurst, the vice president of the far-right Idaho Freedom Foundation, and was using Idaho Freedom Foundation's Freedom Index scorecard. And those candidates won 54% of their races, you know, across the House and Senate. But as for the Senate, you know, they took out a bunch of incumbents. I'm talking about Senator Jim Woodward, which Clark already mentioned. You had Carl Crabtree. You had Peter Riggs in Coeur d'Alene, Jeff Agenbrod in Nampa, not to mention four other open seats that could, you know, could potentially swing much further right. And so, you know, not only could it potentially have an effect on the legislation coming from the House, but it could also influence, you know, much more conservative legislation coming straight from the Senate that might have failed by, you know, a handful of votes or something, to now that gets passed and sent on to the much more conservative House. And Clark made a good point as well with, you know, committee chairmanship, obviously JFAC, but Senator Fred Martin in West Boise lost to Representative Cody Galloway. So there is your chairman of the Senate Health and Welfare Committee, and Peter Riggs was the vice chairman of that committee. So completely new leadership in that committee.
And you know, yeah, did it everything.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, did it everything Jimmy and Clark have said. The Senate is definitely going to be more conservative than it was this year, and that's going to affect not just hot button policy issues, it's going to affect budget bills. And let's talk about budgets here really quickly. One of the big stories, I think, out of this night, and I'm writing a piece about it myself this afternoon. Between seven JFAC incumbents lost last night, seven Republicans who sat on JFAC lost last night. You factor those changes in addition to retirements and defections off of JFAC, there are going to be at least 11 new members of JFAC, a 20-member committee. Over half of the membership will be new. So you're going to have a very different complexion in that committee, maybe a very different approach to writing budgets. Senate Education Committee is going to look completely different. Senate Education Chairman Stephen Thane lost in a head-to-head race with another Senator Scott Groh, thrown together in the same district because of redistricting. Four Senate Education Republicans lost last night, including Woodward and Crabtree that Jimmy talked about before. So who knows what Senate Education is going to look like? Who knows who's going to be running Senate Ed? Who knows who's going to be chairing JFAC on either the House or the Senate side? I mean, yeah, it's going to be the who are these guys legislative session next year. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, I mean, and Clark, you mentioned the redistricting, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. You've been on this, you've written about this a lot. You've been on our program talking about this, talking about how really this redistricting, which happened after the census, you have said this could change Idaho politics for the next decade. And yeah, are we seeing
I think that's right. I think with the combination of redistricting and then these election results, but just to back up real quickly, I was on last fall quite a bit talking about the redistricting process. Just real simply, that was taking the new 2020 census population data and redrawing all of Idaho's legislative boundaries and all of Idaho's, well, both of Idaho's congressional boundaries to reflect all the growth that Idaho saw over the last 10 years. So we have these new boundaries. It meant that a handful of legislators were running against each other. It meant that a lot of voters were in a new legislative district. Like I used to live in a different legislative district than Jimmy, but now we're in the same district because of redistricting. And I think a lot of Idahoans are in new districts. But yeah, with the new districts, with legislators running against each other, with the retirements before the election, with all of these 19 whatever legislator incumbents losing last night. We are going to see a very different makeup of the Idaho legislature. I agree with Jimmy and Kevin that it looks like the Idaho Senate is going to become more poised. And this is really, these districts will be in place for 10 years. And so I do think that this is going to shape Idaho government, politics, and ultimately policy decisions for the next 10 years. We still don't know what's going to happen in November with the general election, which is going to take place on November 8th. And then after that, in early December, legislators will go back to the state capitol building in Boise for what they call an organizational session. That's where we're going to elect new Speaker of the House, new committee chairs. So we're going to have new JFAC chairs. Like Kevin mentioned, we're going to have a new Senate Education Chair. We're going to have several new committee chairs. But absolutely, you know, what's not going to change is the Republicans will continue to control the supermajority in the Idaho right. legislature as they have for almost three decades now. That won't change. But many of the individual faces, something like 40 odd members of the 105 member Idaho legislature, will be different next year, depending on, you know, what we see in November. But the, you know, but electoral history in Idaho and polling numbers tell us that the big shakeups were in this primary. So we saw most of the shakeups today. We'll probably see fewer shakeups in November, but we still got to get through the November election. But yeah, Idaho government, different people are going to be involved with writing and passing budgets and state laws. And that will be fascinating. And that means that political reporters like all of us on the show today will have our work cut out for us over the next several years.
My count, guys, and I'm sleep deprived here too. I count at least 42 legislative seats will change hands just based on what we've seen between retirements and the primary. Even if no other incumbents lose in November, 42 of 105 legislators will be new faces. So, yeah, it's going to be looking at these name tags a lot more closely, trying to figure out, you know, who is this person?
And who they are, yeah. With just about 7 minutes left in the program today, I want to get your takeaways on last night's election. So, Jimmy, can I start with you? Main takeaways, any surprises?
Yeah, again, I guess I would just repeat the points that I kind of made throughout the hour, essentially that, you know, while the far right didn't necessarily gain much traction statewide, aside from, you know, Raul Labrador becoming the next attorney general, presumptively, you know, barring, you know, any kind of upset in the general election, you know, they still made pretty big gains in the state legislature, especially in the Senate, which they have, you know, widely tried to, you know, grab more control of for years. So really, depending on who becomes speaker, you know, I haven't, there hasn't been enough time to really call enough folks to see who might be running for speaker. If, you know, Senate Pro Tem Chuck Winder, who did survive a primary challenge against a far right opponent, you know, last night, whether he will, you know, potentially face danger as Senate pro tem or other members of Republican leadership in the Senate should these results hold through the general. You know, you've got that to look forward to, like Clark mentioned in the organizational session come December. You know, just a whole lot of things that we're going to have to wait and see what kind of implications they have for policy, but certainly, you know, don't expect the same legislature that we've seen the past couple of years. It will be more conservative.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, your thoughts?
I think if anybody was coming into this election hoping to see kind of a definitive outcome in this power struggle between the mainstream Republicans and the hardline Republicans, it didn't happen last night. I'm not terribly surprised by that. If you're the mainstream, you won a bunch of races you really had to have. You had to get Brad Little back, and you got it that decisively. You had to have Scott Bedke win. You had to have Phil McGrane win. You had to have somebody, not Brandon Durst, get the state superintendent's nomination. And you took out some hardline conservative legislators. But if you're on that hardline, you really wanted to get rid of Lawrence Wasdin. You really wanted that race. And you really wanted to make inroads in the state Senate, and you absolutely did that. So I think Yeah, this sets the stage. We're in a long struggle between these two factions of the Republican Party. No clear definitive winner last night.
Mm-hmm. And Clark?
Yeah, I agree with everything they said. I had a lot of fun being on the show today, and I really respect Jimmy and Kevin. I'll take a little bit of a different takeaway, and that is how much the election reinforced to me that every single vote matters. And so when we talk about legislative districts, these new legislative districts were drawn so the population is 52,000 people in all legislative districts. There was a race out in District 9 that was only separated by 6 votes. Among 52,000 people that live in a legislative district, there were a handful of other legislative races. Jimmy and I were texting just before we got on the show that were separated by about 40 votes. And so I would say this really underscored to me and really proved that, especially in local elections, your vote matters and every vote can really count. And I think that these hard fought, closely contested races really prove that.
Yeah, just a
go ahead.
Sorry, just a quick thing on those potential recounts. 4 potentially that we could see between current Representative Judy Boyle and Scott Syme. Apparently, Scott Syme told Aaron Banks Rusby of the Idaho Press that he will request a recount. Then you also have Senator Jim Patrick in the Magic Valley. You've got Ron Nate Britt Raybould in Eastern Idaho. As well as one that's eluding me off the top of my head as well. I believe it was an open primary race.
Mm-hmm. And Jimmy, how long does that take then if they're requesting these recounts?
Oh, we're looking for, a couple weeks probably before we know the final results, because they have to certify the election and then they have to be challenged, is what I was told by a county clerk in Twin Falls County.
Well, as always, I want to thank all of you for taking time to come speak with us today, especially after an incredibly long election night. Appreciate all of your analysis. Also, make sure that you read these folks' reporting. They do great work. Again, we've been talking with Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, Clark Corbin with the Idaho Capital Sun, and our own James Dawson from Boise State Public Radio News. We've been talking about Tuesday's primary and what that means for the November general election, but Idaho's future politically. Again, huge thank you to all of you. Appreciate your time.
Thanks,
Jim.
Thank
you. Always a lot of fun.
Anytime.
And I want to remind all of our listeners that tomorrow on Idaho Matters, we will answer your questions on our medical expert roundtable. As I mentioned, we did need to move it today in order to discuss Tuesday's primary election. So join us tomorrow for that. Get your questions into us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Our senior producer, Samantha Wright. Our assistant producer is Hannah Gardosky. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.